This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Are you ready for No Bad Ideas?
Please stop. That was awful.
I'm definitely not ready.
Nobody's ready, Gabriel.
I don't know what I thought I was ready for, but it wasn't that, and now I'm definitely not ready.
What is the opposite of ready? Can I be averse?
Yeah, really, though.
Hi, Zach.
Hey, Zach.
Hey, guys.
How are you doing today?
I'm great.
Good.
I got some weird stuff from the internet.
No, well, before we jump into that, that's Zach Valenti. I'm Gabriel Urbina, here with...
Sarah Shackett.
And like Zach said a moment ago, this is the No Bad Ideas podcast. And what do we do in this show? I've completely forgotten since last week.
You blocked it out?
I have a five day memory span.
Gotcha.
Everything after that gets strictly deleted.
Well, we grab weird stuff from the internet.
Uh-huh.
That is clearly a bad idea. Just very obviously so. And then we try and make a fun story out of it just to keep ourselves creative and have fun with each other. And we're recording them so that you can listen.
That's right. That's right. And then after that, we take a little bit of time, just check in with how we're doing with our various creative projects. We're all writers and artists of some sort living out in New York City. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we are going to see where we're at with all that. But first... Zach, you have a bad idea.
Well, that was a great summary of the show, you guys. I had like something totally different in my head. You just did it so much better.
I edited that off at the pass. I could see the light in your eyes.
Like, wow, it's really good. I feel like, you know, we wanted to come together and support each other, be creative, have fun. And here we are with this little nugget of the internet.
Great.
And so you're going to read us something
exactly
that is new to us?
They've never heard this.
Okay.
We've just seen him chuckle about it.
You're about to get these two folks reacting in real time to something really weird.
Mm.
And then you're going to set a timer, right?
That's
and
correct.
And we have 30 minutes to make whatever we're about to hear a good story.
Or
to get as far as we can.
Do you hear that dialing in? Click, click, click. Okay. My Facebook archive. This is from Craigslist.org.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
I decided to cut out the middleman and sell my Facebook data directly.
To who?
By purchasing my Facebook archive,
you...
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Okay, I see where this is going.
You can check out what I like, what I love, and what makes me cry, and market your products and political organizations to me more accurately. Furthermore, you can know who my friends are, which ones I follow, and which ones I mute. You can see how far I got in Mafia Wars. And my high score in Bubble Bobble. I guess it's a game.
I have no idea.
You guys, I don't know. How well did I do on that math puzzle that's driving the internet crazy? Find out by purchasing my Facebook data. Here is just a sample of the data you will receive when you purchase my Facebook archive. My family lives in Arizona and they have guns. I was born in Los Angeles, but I don't live there anymore. I posted a picture of the ribs I made one weekend in Hightstown, New York. New Jersey. Hightstown. Sight reading's hard, you guys. It's really small font.
Is it like, are there screen caps of the Facebook posts?
Oh, no, this is copy-pasted text.
Okay, great.
I've been to Great Adventure.
I assume it's a theme park, but I kind of like not knowing.
It's capital G, capital A. I assume it's the Great Adventure theme park.
All right, sure.
But we'd have to buy it to find out. And much, much more.
Mm-hmm.
Don't miss out on your opportunity to market to me and possibly manipulate my political decision. Mm-hmm. Act now. This is a limited time offer because I assume Craigslist will take down this ad.
When was it dated, Zach?
This was posted in April of 2018.
Wow.
April 12th, 2018.
And by the way, guys, we're going to put this on the show notes.
Yes,
so if anybody's curious and wants to take a look at the original bad idea, which, holy cow, Zach, you found such a bad idea.
It's such a bad idea.
This guy.
Look at his face.
Zach is showing us the man's face right now.
It's real. Like,
oh, yeah. No, he has
this puppy dog stare thing.
Yeah. Beard. Like, yeah. You know, it's not Revlon, but like the ads that they used to be in like the 90s for men coloring their beards to get gray out. He looks like he belongs on a box of that stuff.
Right. Oh, man.
Bless you.
Excuse me. Okay.
Okay.
Holy cow. All
so right.
We start the timer.
Yeah, start the timer. Jesus.
And off to the races.
All right, okay. Sarah, here you can take it away. How do we make this?
You sneezed, so it's my... My job
that was
now?
My contribution, the sneeze. Okay, so
this is clear. I mean, this is fascinating because, like, in April of 2018 was when like a bunch of Facebook scandal stuff was coming out, right?
Yes.
Is that so? This is clearly like a protest Craigslist ad. This is this man venting some frustration with the state of the internet.
Yeah,
on Craigslist, which is super dope.
And see, and like, I, like, two pathways immediately present themselves to me. And one is kind of the, you know, somebody is trying to be this man's friend or trying to become romantically involved with this man.
Sure.
And so they need all this information to sort of do the world's creepiest... You know,
but he's offering it, so clearly, like, he needs someone to have way more information than could be acquired on a first date.
So interesting. So maybe this is like actually the start of some sort of like Black Mirror-esque like dating service of kind of like, if you surrender all of your Facebook history to us, we will then give it to someone and they will use that information to become
yes, you're perfect. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the other sort of approach that suggests itself to me is kind of a, like, Gattaca-type plotline.
Oh, sure.
Where there is someone who...
Gattaca is a great movie.
Gattaca
is
a great movie and one of the most amazing scripts ever written, I think.
It's a really good script.
It's, yeah.
And, you know, someone that is kind of some sort of situation where, whether it's for political reasons or for personal reasons, they cannot... just kind of present themselves to society as they are.
Yeah.
And so they need to assume someone's identity.
Right. And that is why they would want someone's personal data.
Right. And so it might be sort of a situation where they need to, not just the personal data of Facebook from this man, but they need to just kind of like assume his online presence and his online identity.
That's interesting because like, There could be an entire market of people who are, because maintaining an online identity is super exhausting, who are taking on, like, I will give you my Facebook data and you will more compellingly sort of post things and sort of act and be my online persona.
Right.
Like, sort of like a Facebook version of her, like the thing that Joaquin Phoenix does for a living.
I am bringing in... all of the things that are just facts of my life. I am bringing in that I am of this particular upbringing, that I went to this school.
Right, where my family are, what I've done for fun.
And my silent partner
Yes.
is going to do all the like hard labor of actually maintaining a persona.
That's interesting.
Ooh, interesting.
The other thing that occurred to me was it's sort of mentioned in the post that this person is trying to disrupt the way that advertisers online are trying to use data to more personally calibrate ads.
Right. They don't want Cambridge Analytica to money. No. They want to get the money themselves.
And there's something interesting in that of just sort of like democratizing the internet gets atomized to an individual level. And like this person wants to start a trend of, you know, folks by giving up their information, suddenly there's, you know, it's valueless and we can all be who we are. And that's like the scheme.
Okay, but one second. We're just circling around which is, where's the great adventure in all this?
I've been to Great Adventure.
Right, like that clearly has to be the title of the movie. Just great Adventure.
Great Adventure.
This is funny because we are recording this right now. Gabrielle has done something very, very mean to me in my personal life, and recommended a game called 80 Days. It's you can get it on mobile apps. I know it's iOS. Is it Android as well?
I believe it is available on Android. And yeah. Like you're gonna need to be patient with it. It's a very non-addictive game.
Yes. but that is, you keep saying Great Adventure, and that is what I'm thinking of, because it's this sort of, it's modeled on the Jules Verne novel and has a very sort of like 1920s travel poster Indiana Jones kind of vibe. So if we can put this man in that world, that would make me personally very happy, but that may not be possible.
Yes. But also, sidebar, makers of 80 Days, we love you. Send us money and we'll mention
so
you on the show more often.
Much.
Love you. Bye.
Oh my God. Meg J. Smith, I think, is the name of the writer.
I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, but she's fabulous.
She's phenomenal.
Yes.
Anyway.
Tick.
Great Adventure.
Tick.
Tick.
This
okay,
is all
okay.
Part of the
This is essential parenthetical detours. Yes.
It's great. I'm very much enjoying this conversation.
No, but Maybe like having been to Great Adventure has taught him something important about needing to get rid of all of his Facebook data.
Maybe they want to buy his Facebook data. Maybe they want to buy everybody's Facebook data now that everybody's selling it. Just
oh,
saying.
You know, I wonder how much it could go to sort of a like being John Malkovich.
Oh, sure.
Sort of a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it isn't...
Hit me with this one, man.
where it isn't necessarily like... Because I think that when we think about what we were talking about before of kind of somebody kind of coming in and doing the hard labor of maintaining this identity. We sort of imagine someone that is down on their luck, someone that is underprivileged.
Sort of doing this as an opportunity to make a quick buck.
What if instead...
Oh, it's a bot or something?
No. It's like 30 rich dudes.
Uh-huh.
Sort of those like, really like, we're so rich and so hedonistic that we're now just like going off the eccentric end of the spectrum.
Sure.
And we now do the craziest things for fun. And they all just like go to this kind of like, you know, middle of the road, kind of schlubby, kind of very average dude.
Uh-huh.
And we're just kind of like, we want to buy your online presence because our new like rich person hobby is going to be to like run a like Sims style, like, you know, control this average person simulation. But we want to do it with like a real person's
like
online presence.
It's like the rich billionaire's version of Stranger Than Fiction.
Exactly. Yes.
Whoa. So one second. So now we've arrived.
We have arrived at nothing. We've like shot off in like four different directions.
I'm just hearing something coalesce around this idea of rich people paying other people to be their real dolls.
Yeah, like, you know, there's sort of like, there's your average amount of wealth in which you live an average amount of wealth life.
Right.
And then there is your high wealth life in which you live
and
like a high wealth life, and then when you're like past that, when you sort of like go beyond
that. No, eventually the villas and private islands get boring
and you want to sort of have like the struggle and the grit of a like middle class existence.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wait, do they replace the person? Like, do they assume their life?
No, just their online presence. I'm thinking,
right,
although
they just
it'll
wire their
impact
house with cameras and like watch them from a control room.
No.
And like like send text messages and like click on a, like what kind of interface?
I could be getting too into the details here.
But
I think we're a little bit of ways away from them actually like driving a person like a car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or at least I am.
I think that like the version of it that I would be interested in is like some idle rich person that is just like, if I buy this dude's Facebook archive, how... And probably he would need a couple of other things. He would probably need maybe like his LinkedIn information and some like, you know, basic like, you know, life data things.
Right.
How long could I run an entirely remote version of this person that has like a job and interacts with people and has like friends
entirely online
before somebody notices that like I am running a fictitious person that like does not exist.
That doesn't quite exist.
Like for instance, like you start like dating in a different city, so like let's say
you
like Bob's in Boston and like I'm like this rich person and I want to like,
and you're in Seattle
basically
and like,
be Bob virtually in like Minnesota.
And so and
but Bob's consenting to this.
Yes,
and Bob is getting paid.
Bob
to participate
has signed
Bob
away the right to his life
That's
information.
The thing that we need to kind of figure out about this is like, are we following I'm just steamrolling right past. Are we following Bob? Who is the person posting the Facebook or the offer for the Facebook information and like what he wants and what he hopes to get out of it, or are we following the purchaser?
And I think
they hope to
and
get
I think
out of it.
Related to that,
it's a great question.
Is Bob selling the access to the information that is on his Facebook, or is Bob selling like the actual information? I.e., like if Bob goes through this deal, can he no longer tell the story about that amazing time when
can
he went
he
to Great
no
Adventure?
Longer
because
mention
that now belongs
the
to the millionaire. Yeah,
yeah,
right. Without licensing
it's,
it,
from the language of the ad, it seems
20-minute warning.
Thank you. The language of the ad seems that, like, it's fine. It's fine.
It's all part of the process script.
From the
language of the ad, please.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
It seems like he is selling access to the information and not rights to the information. I imagine those would be more expensive.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I would be interested in supersizing it.
Oh,
sort of, you know,
going
one step beyond it into like, I'm now sort of like buying the rights to your life. If we were going to do kind of our like, how long can this eccentric millionaire run a like fictitious middle class person?
Bob, now freed of his middle class existence, gets to sort of Don Draper his way around completely with no online presence or anything.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting
as
well.
Oh, you know what it is?
Hmm.
His payment. Bob's payment is a new online identity crafted by the rich person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sort of like the rich person gets the keys to Bob's online identity.
This is becoming an updated version of Trading Places, and I love it.
I'm kind of here for it. Yeah.
Wow.
And Bob sort of now gets like, you know, the access to J. Harrington the 14th's, you know, Facebook data.
Sure. He gets to go to, like, he's already got a plane ticket to go to a masked ball in Versailles and stuff like that.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And it's sort of a little bit of, like, all that, like,
right.
When do I pay? And it's like, no.
It's
just show him that you
of...
have, like, the platinum LinkedIn
No, he just
account.
Gets a black card.
Yeah.
And that's it. And yeah, I wonder if it's sort of like putting a time limit on it might be helpful. Like if Bob can maintain the fiction for a year, then he gets something.
Right.
And then if he fails in a year, then something else bad happens.
Oh, see, but like now we're getting into like interesting like social commentary places, because now we can get to these things of like Bob tries to go to like the rich exclusive country club.
Right.
And they're like, no, we can't let you in. And then he's like, oh, but have you seen? Like, I checked and I have like my Facebook and I checked into that party at Versailles. And then they're like, well, okay then. I mean, you've got the receipts. So come this way, Mr. Bob.
Right.
You know?
And him sort of gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh,
interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's figure out, besides rich boredom, which is a motivating factor, I think, in the real world, but like not as satisfying in fiction.
Right.
Like what our eccentric billionaire wants out of this.
Fascinating. Well, he could be running away from some responsibility.
Sure.
That he doesn't want to have to follow through on.
Right, that like he's sort of maybe inherited a lot of things from his father or grandfather who built the company up, and there's a lot of pressure and expectation for him to continue growing, and he maybe doesn't want that for some reasons, or thinks maybe that like enough is enough, doesn't have the instinct for business.
There is always that he just made a bet with another member of the moneyed elite.
Right.
You know?
No, at the Reform Club while sipping cognac and smoking cigars.
It might sort of be kind of that, like, I bet that you could not keep up this ruse and, like, you know, sort of like manage this middle class existence for a year.
Yeah.
And if you do manage it for a year, then
I will sell you my company.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. One of my companies.
One of. Well, I will sell you my sports teams.
Yes, yes. Well, some of my sports teams.
Exactly. You can have the Clippers.
I kind of like it, though, a little bit more if it's like, I'll let you off the hook having to marry this person.
Then we can make this a romance between the two of them. Which has been in my mind. I don't know how you achieve it, cutting back and forth between these two plots, but maybe.
Like, this is the real problem here.
So you mean that Bob, who gets their identity stolen, gets like...
I mean, taken.
But bought, purchased.
Yes, purchased.
Identity transferred, yes.
Yeah. I'm just... the thing that caught my imagination was just like them in their new profile on OkCupid or whatever, and they get a message from their identity.
Right.
It's like, you look great in that photo. I mean,
they would presumably know.
Well, of course they would.
Yeah.
But then it's just, that's like so bizarre.
What even is this movie?
Yeah.
Is it a movie?
It's a TV series? I think it'd be fun to have it be a movie. And like, because then you can do all these kinds of things where...
You can sort of parallel construct the plots where they're facing similar challenges and how to overcome them, but in wildly different settings and circumstances.
Absolutely. And you can have like all these like fun visual things where, for example, if Bob is, I'm just going to like say two names here, played by, say, James McAvoy.
Sure.
And our rich person is played by, say, Jude Law. And they have that moment where, like, they've now traded identities and they're sort of, like, sitting in their respective rooms typing their computers and they meet up in, like, an OkCupid chat room or something like that. You can cut to that chat room, except now, because you're sort of in the online space, the actors flip around. And so you have
I've got even something better for you.
Yeah.
You brought me in mind of, there's a fantastic movie that came out last year, which everyone should see, called Love, Simon.
Came out this year.
Oh, it came out this year?
Yes.
Time is weird.
This has been a long year, you guys. Year.
I still have to see that.
It's really good.
That's what I've heard.
But one of the things they do is it's sort of a online correspondence romance between a young high school boy and another boy in his school. He doesn't know who that person is.
Right. He only knows his kind of like nom de plume.
Right. And so they're sort of visual, when they visualize the two of them corresponding, whoever he thinks it is at the time is the person who's typing and doing the VO of the letters, which is great. And I think if James McAvoy and Jude Law, because I think we've been calling both of these people Bob.
yeah, there's been some Bob ambiguity.
Right.
Bob-iguity.
But like if we follow our everyman hero, James McAvoy, and he doesn't know who the eccentric billionaire is.
Oh, I see what you're getting at.
Yes. Yeah.
That is so much one better. That's more than one better.
Right.
Several integers.
Then you can have like everyone he interacts with, Jude Law, Carey Mulligan, Keira Knightley. I'm just going to name British actors.
But at a certain point, like the only recognizable thing that he knows for sure this person has is his own face.
Yes.
So at a certain point, like he'll only be talking to himself. Oh, exactly. I like this a lot.
Oh my exactly. God.
And then it gets closer to that John Malkovich place.
Whoa.
Okay. As is so often the case with us, we now have like a handful of like cool visual things which we cannot afford to do at all. But nothing approaching kind of like a salient structure that like begins, middles, and ends.
I mean, films need those?
Call me eccentric, but like I think that they benefit from them.
It depends who you ask.
Yeah.
All right, let's think about that. Sure.
So, I don't know, and I think that like a question that you brought up earlier, Sarah, that we just patently ignored is, who is the protagonist?
Yes. Yeah.
Or is it sort of a like real like trading or, places kind of a situation
right,
where it's really
you're
equal.
Following them both?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can do less visual fun things of sort of visual trickery if you're following them both, is my instinct.
Sure.
Unless like you actually trade actors. I worry about that a little bit in film.
I think that I prefer to just stick to our everyman as the protagonist.
Yeah, so that the audience have an entry point.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. And see, but then it's interesting because then it becomes kind of a movie about this guy who probably is not enormously thrilled with where his life is.
No.
Because he's willing to sell it all.
He's willing to give it all up.
He's willing to give it up.
Yeah.
It then sort of becomes a movie about like you give up your life to someone else in order to get a new life.
Yeah.
And it probably needs to be that, like, he can't actually do that much with the life that he's given.
Right.
And
he
sort of
has
looks
to watch that someone doing
a ton.
Lots with his life. Yeah. We have... what is the episode of Buffy where Xander splits in two?
The Replacement.
The Replacement, thank
yes.
you. We are
yes.
sort of in that territory now.
And it's also a little bit of, like...
Aubrey Plaza movie that I didn't see yet. Goes West.
Ingrid Goes West.
Nice.
Yeah, that plays in a similar. It plays in a similar field.
She was the person that she was stalking. Also,
yes. There's also like a little bit of It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a thing.
Well,
a
I mean,
little
that's
bit.
Frank Capra morals, to be sure.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen A Wonderful Life, It's a Wonderful Life. It's also a great movie.
And it sort of then needs to kind of end up being a thing of like, well, you know, wealth and position and social standing, all of those things, well, they sure do help.
Yeah, they give you options.
But what you do with those options, whether you have two options or a million options, that is the thing that you need to be focusing on.
Right.
Yo.
What?
The billionaire buys other people and then you have like a whole family. Like the guy's like now suddenly married and like...
Oh,
right?
Wow.
And like AI can like stitch like photos together that like wouldn't otherwise be real. And they have a dog that's like an Instagram famous dog they buy. Like,
and that's actually a really good
like a
twist.
Dollhouse.
That's a really good twist because like 8 months after he sort of like sells the millionaire... his information, he can be looking at like the dude's life, like at like his fictional self, and just kind of being like,
Wait a minute, how is he married?
Yeah.
How
and
is
he goes to track down the address, and it's not real, it doesn't exist.
And, yeah,
somebody
like,
else
and, like,
is
right, no, but
exactly.
eventually has
it's
to
all like
uncover.
A gated, it's all gated Sims community
exactly.
that like different millionaires are each running one person there.
Right, no, making like making fiction is not enough anymore. He has to like be putting puzzle pieces together in quote-unquote real life.
Whoa.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Now we're going to, like, a real, like, Synecdoche, New York kind of a place.
Wow.
Of just kind of, like, how much can you, if you hyper-construct a fictional environment.
Yeah.
Here's the kicker. The reason that the billionaires do it is so that when they crash at these Airbnbs, they feel like they're crashing at a friend's house and it's not just their extra
house. Do billionaires need to crash at Airbnbs?
Well, just like I'm imagining like the gated communities or these like the houses that they live in, nobody lives in them because like the person's living their own life.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're just photo, you know, so they like, they make these like pristine houses that are constructed friends. It's not even the billionaire that's decided to do all this. It's like their assistant to make them not feel as lonely.
Yeah, no. And I,
interesting.
And like, it's like your friend Bill, who has that great family that you met at that cocktail once, and oh yeah, sure.
No. And I remember, like,
not a good idea.
I actually quite like it.
I'm sorry.
There's something interesting.
No bad ideas here.
Yes,
there are no bad ideas. Exactly.
Oh man, I'm so self-critical.
I actually quite like it because it, you know, there can be sort of this like intrigue that the everyman has as to why is this person doing this?
Yeah.
I don't buy that it's just like
for
an
funsies,
eccentric,
yeah,
you know, funsies thing. I bet that there's some kind of evil scheme going on. I bet that they're going to like, you know, try to like take over the government, try to topple a corporation,
right,
try to
both,
do something.
What's nice about it is they're both falling into the wrong assumption.
Yes.
Of, you know, how to deal with loneliness.
Exactly.
That's what this is then about.
Yes.
Right.
But there can be sort of like, it's like there's a great episode of Dollhouse.
Yes.
Where which is a series all about, if you haven't seen it, about people who kind of construct fake realities and fake people to the point of kind of implanting them with false memories
so that they can do things for clients. It's a romp.
Complicated. Yes.
Yes, it is a complicated show.
Yes.
But there's one episode where the designer we learned that once a year he sort of like gets the dollhouse to himself and he uses one of the dolls to create himself kind of like a friend, kind of like the kind of person that like he always wanted to appreciate him but never did.
But has never found.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that there's sort of something to that of kind of like the millionaire can create this like hyper-constructed space that one day a year he can step into and sort of, you know,
and
live.
De-stress.
Exactly.
And sort of live a version of his
there
life that is constructed and artificial.
And where it's like, even though it isn't real, I can simulate the thing where people see me.
Yes.
And not the things that I have.
Right.
I quite like this.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Well, there's still 5 minutes on the clock, you guys.
I mean, that we
can land this plane. We can land this plane.
No, we have a beginning and we have an end.
How does it end?
No, because like eventually our everyman hero has to discover the
uncovers
community.
Uncovers the plot, right.
Yeah, and decide whether to expose it or not.
Oh, okay. I see.
Unless we're, again, parallel cutting between the two storylines and like our billionaire sort of struggling in the rich world and getting go back to his quote unquote more authentic place and our new friend in wealth and power.
No, I think that we need to keep the perspective to the everyman.
That's,
I think that there
I
needs
agree.
To be that limited perspective.
Right.
To
so
have a
he
sense
needs
of
to
mystery.
Sort of have. We need to sort of follow him at a like a really bad, awful, no good, very bad day where he decides to make this choice, have someone take him up on acquiring his Facebook archive. And then once he has a new identity with a black card, we can have a little bit of like Wolf of Wall Street, wealth montage sequence.
Mm-hmm. Question but it's all very barren and hollow.
Right. It's none of it quite fills him in the way that he wants. I don't know what happens next, but eventually he discovers what the billionaire is after.
I think that probably what happens next is that he discovers another person
sure.
in the lap of luxury. That is another kind of imposter,
that's had,
like
has
another
taken
person.
That deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
And that's when all of a sudden his like brain sort of clicks into gear, and it's like, wait a
this
minute,
is
no,
way
no,
bigger.
No, 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 no,
yeah.
no.
Yeah, this
yeah.
is a trend,
right? And I think that like from then on, it can be sort of like the two of them.
Oh, sure.
Who have had similar unfulfilling privileged
lives.
Existences.
Yeah.
Privileged existences since taking
since
the
they,
deal. Previous
yeah.
to that, very unfulfilling middle class existences.
Right. Still privileged, but like
yes.
in different ways. And yeah, the two of them sort of moving through high society to uncover the truth.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Which we can solve that.
Okay. So here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make it more or less interesting? I know that we probably have like seconds left.
Whatever.
I'm just going to throw this
yeah,
off there.
Yeah, 3 minutes.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Oh, great.
Great. Does it make it more or less interesting if you actually like take this to a Black Mirror place and sort of put it in a sci-fi setting and it's we're going to buy your memories and we're going to replace them with memories. But you are going to know that they're fake memories.
They're
you
fake.
Won't remember, but you'll remember that you took this deal.
This got a lot darker. Right before you said that, I was like, this is like the story of the guy who sells his eyes in Minority Report that we never meet.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Buys
yeah, yeah.
more eye, like, you know, get somebody else.
If you haven't seen Minority Report,
it's
a really,
it's
good,
a really
movie
good movie
with a really gross eye-involving episode
yeah,
in the
so
middle.
So gross.
I'm less interested in that, oddly enough. Usually sci-fi I'm on board for. Unless I think that makes it more of a mystery thriller.
It kind of does.
And takes out, probably takes out a lot of the sort of comedic elements that something, that a journey like this might have.
Yes.
And so it's a tonal choice.
And I think that for that choice to work, you meet him right after the deal happened.
Oh, sure.
And you don't know who he was before the deal.
No, it's like Lost style. You open on him waking up.
Yeah,
the
right.
day after.
Yeah.
Which is a clean structure, to be sure. I kind of like setting it in the real world, though. I feel like it's such an abstract thing, and it's abstracting it too far makes it a little more safe and a little, I don't know.
I kind of feel that in the same way that Sorry to Bother You really benefits from being like a caricature of reality, but a reality that we can recognize.
Yes.
I think that this and might also benefit from
have
that.
Have to reckon with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't go off the rails until like halfway or like much later through that film.
Correct. If you haven't seen Sorry to Bother You, it's a really good movie.
Seriously,
and I think that similar, this would take a very delicate handling of how it escalates and of how...
And if you watch Sorry to Bother You, it doesn't go off the rails. What's there is there from the start. And it's the point of the movie. And so this is something I think we would have to write very carefully, but would benefit on rewatch the way that movie does, hopefully, of like seeing that the absurdity is latent and has always been there.
Right, right. Okay. Any last thoughts?
Probably not James McAvoy, much as I like him.
Okay.
Probably somebody else.
10.
Nine.
I don't know. What else can we say?
It's what if it's not Facebook? What if it's Twitter?
Oh, no.
And that's time.
If it's Twitter, just everybody dies.
Guys, I'm so impressed with the story that you just took that weird post and ran with. And now we're here.
It was a great
quality
post.
Good post. It's one of those like, why is somebody doing this?
I know.
This is such a terrible idea.
There was so much in there. We could have run with Great Adventure. We could have run
which
with,
I still
like,
think it needs to be what it's called.
Oh,
I think
sure.
it needs, still just needs to be Great Adventure. Adventure.
That's amazing. So can I ask one question just to like sort of unpack your storytelling thinking? I'm getting my sort of head reoriented around script writing and for Rice Grave Ember. And you said something when we hit the sort of fork in the road of who is our protagonist,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, we can either do the, you know, sort of average Joe guy, the super rich guy, or both. But audience placement kept sort of being the like motivator for deciding one way or the other.
Sure.
I guess just like, that there would be more mystery, or I'm just wondering if you guys can unpack that choice a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I think that when we talk about audience placement, we're just kind of talking about what information the audience has when and how that impacts
how they view what they're watching.
So, for example, with something like this, if our main character, just like a lawyer, shows up and sort of goes, my client, who for all intents and purposes we are going to call X, wants to buy your information. And you don't ever, as the audience, during the entire process where the paperwork is getting signed and they're getting all the things that they're getting in exchange.
And then like the envelope slides across the desk with the black card inside.
You never, you never see X. Then both you and the protagonist are in this point of, okay, I'm deadly curious.
Both the viewer and the protagonist have the same amount of information about this mysterious figure. And so things that they're curious about becomes things that you're curious about. And that helps you get involved in the story.
Whereas if, while we are doing all of that, the film is cutting back to X, and X is a 12-year-old who just happens to have like inherited $12 billion from his dead parents.
Right.
That sort of like impacts your audience placement because then you're sort of invited to look at these things.
Don't forget his Bitcoin.
Yeah, sure.
Right, sure.
Because that impacts you because you're looking at kind of like our everyday man and he's kind of going like, who is this person? I bet that they're Michael Bloomberg or, you know, this other like great millionaire.
Is this Bill Gates? What's going on?
Cut and, to yes. the 12-year-old playing with his like, you know, Nintendo Switch on his bed. And that sort of invites you to kind of look at things with like, okay, this is a little bit more absurdist. This is a little bit more cartoony. Right. This is a little bit.
You're. It allows you to sort of judge the choices that the protagonist makes and the things that the protagonist feels in a different way. And it can be very funny to have that perspective that a main character doesn't have. But if you know you're following that person throughout an entire film, probably you don't want to laugh at them too much.
Yes. Or if they're both kind of people who are a little bit more similar. And I think mm-hmm. that one of the things that we were perhaps toying around with the idea of these are like more or less people around the same ages and around yeah. the same temperament. If you then have a film where you're following one person for half a movie and then another person for the other half and you're kind of cutting back and forth.
Right.
That invites you to look at things. And I think that that does a lot to kind of reframe it as like, look at their personal journeys and look at yes. kind of how they're growing as people, but it turns the mystery down by a lot.
Right.
Like it turns the volume down on the intrigue and on yeah. the ooh suspense. Becomes, what's going to happen?
Yeah, no, it's sort of you have one path that's kind of more suspenseful. You have one path that's kind of more comedic, and I think there's the third path is which is the one that you're talking about where it's. Sentimental isn't the right word, but you sort of see how these people either complete each other or how things that they're able to access now fulfill something. And it becomes, you know, character focused, but in a more distanced way.
And I think that for something like this.
Would you say melodramatic?
Maybe.
Words are hard.
Words are very hard.
I think for something like this, because it's already kind of a larger than life kind of cartoony premise.
Yeah.
Intuitively, I kind of leaned into, we probably want like a little bit of mystery and a little bit of intrigue to.
And to take this more seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you want to go total farce, which is an option that is always open to us.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for answering that question.
Totally.
And thank you for bringing us such a great awesome. Bad idea,
awesome, Zach.
My pleasure. I look forward to doing it again sometime soon. And I guess take a little break.
Yeah.
Come
and
back.
Come right back. All right, so we are going to just crash into the show for just
breaking
one
things, man.
Do you have your driver's license?
You don't ask questions you don't want answers to, man. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
No. But we're here to talk for a second about just like a couple of things that we think are going to make all of our lives easier.
Including yours.
Including yes. yours.
Ours. Collectively.
And yeah, we actually want to start right there because we actually have this great offer from a service that we really, really like and that we've all gotten a lot out of.
Yeah.
And we want to pass it on to you because if you are a aspiring writer, somebody that is working in audio, in video, just like really anyone whose job in some way involves thinking and then being able to like find the structures in those thoughts.
Listening or talking to people, this is of interest to you.
Yeah. If you do any of that, you're going to be surprised by how much your life can be improved if you have a good transcription service. Someone that can just take everything that you say and turn it into actually like available and readable letters that aren't just you chasing through the hallways of memory trying to remember what was that thing that I said last time and what was the phrase? Oh, I had a really, really good thing that now I can't remember.
Oh no, it's lost forever.
No, leave those days behind. Just like let all of that go away and actually, when it matters, get the things that you say out loud transcribed. And for our money, we haven't found a better place to do that than Rev.com.
I've been using them for years. I think I introduced you guys.
You definitely did.
I can't count how many of my friends I put onto this thing over the years, and it's awesome to get to partner with them now. We got you guys a $10 off your first transcription. And when it's starting at $1 a minute, that's 10 minutes of audio.
Which is great.
And it's done by a person. Like that might seem expensive compared to like some of these like AI sites.
No, but like we cannot stress what a difference
it makes. Make a difference.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah. Like AI, don't get us wrong. They've come a long, long way, but there's still some places where they are not going to be able to take an intuitive leap and understand that that word was actually this thing instead of that thing. And sometimes that can really be the difference between capturing that beautiful, wonderful snowflake of a thought that you thought was lost and just like having a garbled mess that you can't make any sense
like
out of.
Or like an hour of your life trying to fix it.
Right. Yes. You're paying for it somewhere.
You are.
Have personally spent on the order of hundreds to thousands of bucks with them over the years on a number of projects, and I can highly recommend them, and you can get your discount at nobadideaspodcast.com/rev. That's nobadideaspodcast.com/REV.
And just to be clear, just like you click on that link and it immediately takes
you. Go there. Yeah, that's exactly
right.
It takes you to the site, puts in all the information, if it's your first time purchasing.
That's great.
You'll be off to the races.
Awesome.
That's pretty cool.
And as long as we're talking about races, we are having a really, really great time making things and being back on the internet and putting things out regularly.
It's a race.
Well, we're trying to have it. That is exactly where I was going, Zach. You read my mind. But we're trying to balance out doing that with kind of the like reality of living in the 21st century rat race.
In New York City.
And us having to work all kinds of, part-time jobs,
side jobs, diagonal jobs.
My side hustles.
Yeah.
And we would much rather honestly be putting out content for you guys. We would much rather be doing more episodes of No Bad Ideas. We would much rather be doing side projects like Time Bombs. We would much rather be worrying about the next big project that we're trying to like bring into the world for all of you guys to enjoy. And if you want to help us redirect our attention towards those things instead of pounding the pavement looking for the next person that'll help us make a rent check, you can actually help to redirect that attention. And the best way to do that is through patreon.com and our Patreon page, which people can find at
nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
nobadideaspodcast.com/support. That's right?
That's right.
nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
I think that I got it now.
Okay, great.
Excellent. If you get there, you can sign up, you can give us a recurring donation where every time that we put out an episode, your credit card gets charged, whatever you think is right, whatever you want to, and whatever you can spare for a new episode of entertainment. And trust us, less than a dollar. Like, you know, every little bit of it.
Only give as little as a dollar.
As I was saying, a dollar.
Dollar counts.
It really does.
It all makes a difference. And if you give enough dollars, depending on what the tier is, you will actually get something for yourself.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. What will they get, Zach?
Well, our first tier has writers in mind. We know it's NaNoWriMo, Rise Cry of Ember. It tis the season to be writing.
Yeah, it's the end of the year. We're all trying to get something out of our systems.
That's right. We got your back with writing prompts.
Yeah, we've got some web-exclusive writing prompts. We get together, talk about them, talk through them.
Want to write? If you've been meaning to start, if we have ideas for you for how to do that are hopefully fun and useful. And we'll maybe do other things, too. So if you have ideas for things you would like for...
Let us know.
Yes, that... Let us know.
So, yeah, check out our Patreon at that page URL that we said before. No.
All waiting we're to see who it's
in. NoBadIdeasPodcast.com/support. It's a mouthful, you guys.
It is a mouthful.
Easier to type.
Yes.
Help us out, and we're going to be back here to do more content for you as often as we can. And trust us, it's going to make a very, very big difference.
Thank you.
Right, and we're back.
Yeah.
So we survived Zach's bad idea.
We did.
Which actually turned out to be a pretty good idea.
I'm pretty into it, yeah.
And now we want to spend a little bit of time just talking about writing and creating in general. We've got some questions that we'll go over a little bit later that folks wrote in with.
Thank you for writing.
Yeah, seriously. And Zach, you had a thing first, though, right?
I did, because I had a couple of potential, quote, bad ideas. I think we're, in the infancy of the show, I'm still wondering sort of what's the right thing, right, to bring. And, specifically, there's only one thing, because I'm not much of a Redditor.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't spent time on the site.
I don't think that I've spent more than 10 minutes cumulatively on Reddit.
Right.
Yeah.
If that. There was one thing that I'd found like years and years ago, and I forget how, if somebody like sent it to me, that was like this like kind of cry for help on the like subreddit of get disciplined, where somebody was just like, I just don't care about myself. And then it proceeds to be like a multi-paragraph like
sidebar.
Get disciplined.
The get disciplined Reddit sounds like a dark, dark place.
Right. Well, so right. And this is the darkness. I just don't care about myself, period.
Oh my God.
And that's the sum of the post?
No.
Like that's the title.
It goes on for paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs. No. It's somebody who's away at college and who's basically fallen into bad habits around.
We definitely
just like
didn't do that.
Not.
No.
Like, sort of like pushing themselves to do stuff or have a routine.
And, okay.
They basically are depressed, it sounds like, or dealing with what like sort of looks logistically like a lot like depression. And I can definitely relate to this experience. And so it goes on paragraphs. And the thread blew up. It got like 1,420 comments.
Whoa.
Like over 3,000 like up facing arrows, which I think is a thing on Reddit.
Upvotes. I think
that's what they're called, I think.
Good question. Redditors, let us know.
Sorry for butchering your platform.
Regicate us.
Don't do that.
Don't ignore it.
Really don't do that.
Beep, beep, beep. We're backing up at a bad joke. But so then.
Okay.
Somebody replied with like twice as many paragraphs. It was so long and it got 10,885 up arrows. Like it got so much more attention than even the original thing.
Okay.
And it's maybe some of the like best life advice I've ever gotten. And it's like one of my only experiences with Reddit. So when I'm reminded that it's mostly a cesspool, if that's true, I don't know, but that's like what I've heard.
But you have a really positive experience.
I just have like one touch point of this like very, very like sweet message that's like from Ryan in Canada, who basically has this like core idea of non-zero days.
As in you have more than 0 days left ahead of you?
No,
or?
As in like if there's something that is important to you, whether it's your well-being, whether it's your art, whether it's your family, whatever it might be, just to make sure there's no day where zero happens in that
era.
Oh,
I see.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Okay.
If you're a writer, put a letter on a page. If you're a musician, like touch the strings of your instrument. Even if you're not going to play that day.
You've used the expression touch the strings
I have.
Before.
So like,
that's from this post?
Well, no, it's not from this post, but it's like the same advice in a different like linguistic little nugget. You know, it's like a different like sort of candy coating of the same sort of core
idea. Sure.
Or way of being, it's like, having no 0 days gives you like a binary 0 to 1 scale to look at for like, you know, like I don't want to write today, but okay, fine, I'll write a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the like touching the strings is like a little bit more of a kinesthetic sort of frame around the same idea of like, make sure you like engage
you're
with that physical activity.
With the thing you want to do.
Right. Sure. Even if you're just passing by and like touching it.
But okay, let's stay focused on the advice from the post itself.
Right.
So non-zero days.
Yes. So I basically my initial thought was, oh, I'll bring in this post and just tell you the like the funny version of the story of like, you know,
mm-hmm.
so there's this dark play, you know, and sort of like, you know, building that up. But there's not that much conflict in the actual post that would be a great story.
It's also just a good idea.
Yeah.
Like,
but
idea. No conversion necessary.
That's yeah. It's also just like a really good idea. And like, doesn't really lean towards narrative. I don't know. It's like one of those things. It's like,
that like it called out to you, but not necessarily as something that could be turned into a story. It's more
could
advice.
Be storyfied.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And then you guys were like, we should talk about it now. So I'm like, yeah, let's talk about it now.
So what is it that like drew you to this? Like, what do you like so much about it?
Well, I think just in the spirit of what we're doing with this show
mm-hmm.
is like no zero weeks with like uploading to the internet. I think having a really pithy way of sort of saying like, you know, do the thing.
Yeah.
And like, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to, cause I think I'm guilty of making myself feel guilty for not doing 1,000,000 things
sure.
every day.
Yeah.
And I let myself sort of get crushed under the like judgment of
yeah.
looking outside at other people and, you know, seeing, you know, people get verified on Twitter. And
that, by the way, like, that I just did was a yeah. Oh, I recognize this. Yeah. I do that too. Not a yeah of like, yeah, Zach, you do that a lot. You really tear yourself up, man. And it's painful to watch. Yeah.
I mean, you can interpret what my yeah meant. No, it was, right. It was recognition, like very, very much so.
So yeah, I don't know. It's just like one of those things that like, I feel like as we keep doing this, like ideas like that feel like they belong in the, like the world of no bad ideas.
Sure.
Yeah. It's interesting because one of the kind of hard truths that I've had to, learn about myself is that as a writer, I'm much more of a sprinter than I am a marathon runner.
Mm.
I'm very interested to see how this month, where I'm trying to write an
right.
entire novel, and that forces you
NaNoWriMo.
To marathon.
Yeah.
And so far, I've done a pretty okay job of kind of writing something every
right.
day.
Right. If you're new and have no idea what NaNoWriMo is, it's a national novel writing month.
Yep.
It's a challenge where you write 50,000 words or more.
Or more.
Or less. Or more. If you just want to write a novel that's less, but it's or more.
Yes. But most of the time, I do really, really poorly with kind of this like, write things every day and just kind of like carve out and
yeah.
write for like 2 hours every day and just kind of like pour it out a little bit.
Because the urgency isn't there.
Right. I do much better with don't write the script, think about it, but don't start it. And then like in a single day, write 90 pages of it. Which I'm not saying is healthy or good for my gastrointestinal tract.
Oh, man.
But it's much, much more how I operate and much more how sort of like the work gets done. Which is something that for years caused a like undue amount of stress in my life and
yeah.
an undue amount of I'm doing my job wrong. Like I'm
doing...
Or
I'm not really good at this.
Yeah.
Because like I don't do it the way you're supposed to.
Exactly. Like...
Mm. Yeah.
And... I think that things like this, like sort of like non-zero days, while they are a great balm in some ways, if you're someone like me, your brain might hear that and it might catch in sort of that like little guiltiness of kind of like, oh, but I haven't written any, like I haven't written a single word this week. Oh God, failure,
yeah.
shame. And so I want to sort of just kind of like for any other people whose brains work in the same very bizarre way that mine does, I want to sort of encourage you that work does not need to show up on the page.
Mm-hmm.
If you take an hour to think about what is happening, if you take an hour to...
Or to read something related or like...
Yes.
Engage with it in some fashion.
Because all the work that you do up in your brain is work that will show up on the page, whether that is... because you are writing it every day as you work up, as you work it up inside your brain, or because it is all happening like as you write it out. It's all going to show up there. And don't think of it as the non-zero needs to have a visible, concrete, physical, in the world result. It can all be sort of something that can also be happening inside your head.
This is a good way, I think. It's interesting to sort of try and ease people into that routine and that sort of doing something on a daily basis without making it threatening. But I had a very similar reaction to you, Gabrielle, of like, oh, I have a lot of 0 days.
Yeah.
One thing I've been doing this year that I think has been helpful, maybe a little too comforting, but has been helpful, is I've been keeping a legal pad and keeping everything I need to do, like writing it down. And I used to keep things separate, like need to finish this script, need to like pay my rent, need to
do laundry.
Yeah. Now they're all together. And as you know, and crossing something off, like go hang out and record with Gabrielle and Zach, allows me to sort of feel like I did something today and push away. You know, I think if you are sort of in that place where, you know, you're not being Stephen King and like writing a bunch of words every morning, you can sort of take that sense of failure a little bit further and feel like I've done nothing.
Yeah.
I've done nothing useful this entire week. And I, you know, have a physical list of things that I have done this week and can look at it and be like, you know what? I did my laundry and I have fresh fruit in my fridge. So this weekend I'm going to be ready to write the stuff that I need.
That's great. I love that. I've been using note cards.
Yeah.
And I have like just stacks of like push pin note cards of like, oh, I did those. And it like feels really satisfying.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
No, any way that you can build a sense of accomplishment, I think is so useful to helping you continue to do work.
Hmm. All right.
So we had questions.
Let's take a look at some of the questions that we got from folks this week. Let's see.
You have them, right?
I got them.
Okay.
All right. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay. How much do you worry / how much should you worry about your new writing being different or distinct from your old writing? it's kind of a like, we just did, for example, Wolf 359, which we finished last year. How much should we worry about the thing that we're doing this new year not being Wolf 359? Or should we worry the other direction? Like, how should we worry about it being similar and identifiable and there being like some continuity? Or do we even think about this at all?
I'm curious what your answer is, Zach.
So just to be clear, the question is like, kind of how do we feel about continuing to write Wolf 359 stuff or not?
No, I think the question is, you finish one thing.
Yeah.
How much should you worry about your next thing, which is a new thing?
Right. Being similar or different from what you've written before.
Oof. Oh, I mean, it depends what you're after, you know? And I think when I think about, you know, any given artist that I could be talking to, like, I know what I would say for myself.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm kind of aggressively, like, quick to get bored. And so, like, I am going to try to do as different a thing as I possibly can.
Cool.
In many ways. But I think there's some ways that you just can't, like, get outside of yourself.
Yeah.
And so there's, like, inevitably going to be some DNA in the thing that is just familiar and similar. Mm-hmm. And I think if you've done any study of a body of an artist's work and, like, multiple different artists, you see those patterns emerge.
Everyone has certain obsessions, which their brain just kind of calls forth. And
right.
Just kind of like, no matter what subject they're tackling, it's going to always be arranged in a way where it ends up being seen through a prism that is particularly interesting to that person.
I think my biggest question is this writer trying to make a go of it in Hollywood or not?
See,
and that's where
we
I
don't
would,
know, do we?
Right.
No, well,
no, and if they did, then I would have different, like, I would have like career advice of like, you want to write like the writer whose jobs you want. And if they have like one you know, show that's like in this voice, and you know, you want to break into these TV rooms, you should have like this list of scripts, and they should be different in these ways from each other.
Yeah, like it's one of those where creatively my answer is you should not worry about it at all. Because like even if you tried, you could not make the same show twice, because you've gotten however many years older, and you've probably, you know, you've moved into a different apartment, you've seen more movies, you've consumed more books, you've eaten more bowls of cereal. You're however similar you might be, I need. You have moved forward, and you're going to have a slightly different perspective on it, even if you're like...
If you're interested in the same things.
Yeah. Creatively, like as far as like your fulfillment as an artist.
Other people outside of you might think about it, tell you what to do or not do creatively. Exactly.
And then though, and there's sort of that aspect of it of like, but if you're not doing it just
there's a hint I get from the language of the question that they are worried about audience and like people,
right?
What people think of their work and whether it's too similar or too different.
And that's tough.
And you're not going to please everyone.
You can't control that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's always going to be people who think that you didn't go far enough, and that is going to be followed directly by the email from the person that thinks that...
You went too far.
Exactly.
And then there's the baby bear that is happy with it as well. And like, that's, I think, right. The biggest thing is like, you got to be in that baby bear seat yourself. Like, if you don't love what you're...
No, you have
Mr.
to.
Baby Bear
it has to work
to
for you.
You
first.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just trying to engineer a result, and
it's got to be just right for you.
Yeah.
And that may include industry considerations if that is like, you know, the end that this person has in mind. Like they're trying to like move to LA, and they want to have enough spec scripts of the right different sort of variety that if they get the meeting, they have the thing that, you know, they're going to be asked for.
Yeah.
And at that point, I think that it becomes kind of a, like, that needs to then be a consideration that you have in your brain as you try to calibrate.
Yes.
But it still needs to be something that feels...
It can be a limitation that you put on yourself
as you write.
And things will develop along similar lines. But, like, I think all of us are having the same reaction of creatively, like, there are so many other things you should be worried about that aren't whether you, it sounds similar or different to something you did before.
Do you guys worry about this? Like, do you guys
have... I feel like I have more basic worries of, like, I think that the closest thing that, like,
right.
I sort of worry, like, does it suck?
Right. I would say that
do we have anything to say?
That is, I think, the closest thing that I have is, like, so often I'm like, I have nothing to say. There's whatever I'm interested in, someone out there has said it already and better than I could. And, like, that is the paralysis that I fall into. Not, like, is it too different from this episode that I wrote? Like, is it too similar? Yeah, I feel like I have some, like, a step before that. So if this is your worry, congratulations, you've moved past some stuff.
That's funny. I'm definitely in that boat, Sarah. And I think, like, recently in writing, especially as I've been getting, like, a little bit into, like, creating meditation, like, products, like, you know, guided meditations, like, workshops and stuff. Like, I'm just like, yo, you should just, like, put on a Krishnamurti video. Like, why are you hiring me?
Mm-hmm.
But it's because it's like not always fun to watch those videos. You know, like those videos are appealing to who they're appealing to. There's a reason that they're not viral.
Sure.
And so it's like translating things. Like, I think that's more where I feel like, you know, after does it suck? It's like, how can I make it fun?
Mm-hmm.
Not only for me, but for the person sitting through it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I definitely don't jump to this person's question.
Do you, Gabrielle? Do you worry about, I mean, things sounding too similar, sounding too different?
I don't. And, you know, and like, I think back to a lot of the artists that I really, really love. And a lot of them are people who one of their recurring criticisms that they get is that people feel that they just tell the same story over and over again. And I'm the one that is sort of going like, okay, but like, just because they're all about like fishermen in their mid-30s. Like, come on, like they're so different. They're all like such different nuances right. of things. They all just like summon up different elements and different anxieties
the
and different perspectives.
The crab fisherman is really different from the salmon fisherman.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
So no, this isn't something that like really haunts me.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a follow-up question though. Were you guys worried about this as we were writing Wolf 359 about, say, like season 3 being similar enough to season 2 or being different enough from season 2?
I think we weren't, or at least speaking only for myself, I wasn't worried about that. I was definitely on the eye for, or, you know, on the lookout for stories we may have already told in some way, or sort of situations we'd put the characters in that, you know, had resolved something. And so putting, you know, Eiffel and Hilbert on an adventure through the station where they talk about their paths again would have diminishing returns because Lame-O superhero origin story existed.
Sure, sure.
And just like having, it wasn't a worry, it was just often like a limitation.
I feel like we were so aggressive in the blue skying to like really ratchet up the stakes every season, like right before we got into the episodes, that I don't feel like we were ever, I was never worried about would it be different enough, because we just started out from such a gonzo, like, yeah, we're just gonna like flip this world upside down.
Something fundamental had changed every season.
Right, and that made that job easier.
Fair enough. All right, asked and answered.
Yeah.
I think we have time for maybe one more question.
Quickly?
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, here's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
If you had, underline the word had, okay. not got okay. to, not like could, but uh-huh, had, uh-huh. To make an adaptation of any previously existing work or story.
Oh boy.
Which one would you pick and why? So like if you had to like write a movie or write a YouTube series or a comic book or something.
About a pre-existing story?
Right, like based on something.
So wait, just what would you adapt if you could adapt anything?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Robert Moses.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Explain who Robert Moses is, because you've talked about this to me before.
So Robert Moses, so first of all, there's a book that's bigger than I am out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biography on him. And
this is a testament to how long
outrageous.
The book is, not yes. like how large the font size they
no,
used
no, no,
in
no.
the print.
No, yeah. It's tiny font. It's an encyclopedia on a man. Basically, it's the story of a man with the best intentions paving the road to hell. Like
okay.
it's like a young idealistic politician who then gets the power he wants to do the good that he sees there is to be done, who then gets kind of corrupted by that power and it causes, you know, so many more unintended consequences and problems. And it's just, it's the story of the problematicness of power. And the like, you know, I think in many ways the fundamental danger of an individual like sort of looking to assert its will on a larger group for the betterment of the group with its limited perspective and without necessarily being open to, so it's just like there's so many different moving parts to it, and it's such a rich, well-told biography that picking where to go in is tough. So
he was a New York based
yeah so he
politician?
Was in New York City. He basically, like, in the course of his like lifetime in politics, like created a mini empire in the city where he was, you know, building public works projects at unprecedented scales, like, you know, many of the bridges. I'm pretty sure, was it Shea Stadium? I think it was one of the big baseball stadiums he was opening. He was like, probably this is how Caesar felt. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I know. Well, he was like going toe to toe with presidents in his day and like winning.
And it, like, when was his heyday? Like, sort of like what era?
I would have
like
to look it up.
Like,
I'm going to get a
century,
terrible
40s.
Memory for these kinds of things. I would have to Google
okay.
it.
Sure.
That doesn't sound.
But he's responsible for like a lot of the stuff in Central Park, right? Robert Moses?
His name's on a lot of shit.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
He basically like backed his way into like multiple positions that gave him almost unlimited authority and power. He was like, he created one of the biggest toll bridges and was like set up on, what's that like little island off of Manhattan?
Governor's Island?
I think Governor's Island. Basically he had like a whole like sort of cathedral, like it wasn't a cathedral, but like, you know, his own private sort of.
So what medium would you adapt his story into?
There's part of me that like is excited about maybe doing it as an audio drama.
I mean, like, it sounds like HBO would love something like that.
That's the thing, is I feel like it really wants to live on premium television.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, audio drama would really be the
Boardwalk Empire was chump change.
To just kind of truck it out and test it.
Sure.
Without gargantuan fortune that it would cost to recreate some of these sweeping sets. But HBO would be, I think, smart to make something like this. It's just so of the moment right now. It's just like, you know, there's like sex, there's politics, there's race. It's just like it comments so meaningfully and obliquely on like our times and like characters that are just sort of, you know, making the world confusing. So that's what I would do.
That's a good answer.
That's a pretty good answer. Yeah.
Sarah, do you have anything off the top of your head?
I have like five things, and I'm trying to pick between them.
Sure.
Because I have to adapt one.
Yes. Somebody has suckered you into signing a contract.
No, I've woken up somewhere.
Your version was a lot darker than mine.
Yeah. It's kind of unadaptable.
Okay, that's a good start.
Wow.
But there is a Ursula K. Le Guin short story that's absolutely beautiful called The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this very sort of meditative, philosophical tract on, like, would you live in a utopia if you knew? And, like, living there means you had to know something was wrong and rotten at the core of it. And the way it's written, the prose is so rich and beautiful and flowing. And it's so poignant. I think there's a part of me that, like, there are like a bunch of historical figures similar to Zach that I would love to play around with. Alcibiades was a Athenian politician during the height. Yeah, you know who my man Alcibiades is.
I don't know if I would call him my man, but
I mean, he was no one's man.
He was no one's man.
This man died in flames, literally throwing daggers at his enemies.
What the fuck?
And it, you know, got kicked out of multiple kingdoms for impregnating the wives of kings. He's nuts. And you know, chiller people as well. Like, I think there might be a really fun, weird comic to come out of Julian of Norwich's ideas and her life. But the story of The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas, I think, is such a beautiful and evocative setting that I would love to play there. I don't know what I would do with it. It would not be a retelling of that story because it's just kind of like a philosophical question. But starting there in either maybe like a comic or a TV form, I think would be really cool. So that's my answer.
Gotcha. Sweet. That's a great answer. I think for me, like, the thing that keeps popping into my head that I'm like, sort of taking a moment to be like, no. You want this to be a TV show so you can watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't actually
want to do it.
Do it. Because I think that it is perfect as it is. And I just don't want to, like, take anything out of it.
Is it The Wicked and the Divine?
No, but it's actually a comic book series that we talked about in the last episode, I think. Nameless City by Faith Erin Hicks, which is perfect as it is, as a three sort of, like,
so good
book series. And I'm sort of taking a moment to kind of be like, no, I don't actually want to.
There's folks, if it had to go on television.
Exactly.
Then,
no, get like Brian Konietzko.
And oh gosh,
DiMartino, to do it and get their studio, and they would do an amazing job with it. And it would be a fantastic children's series.
But what are you? Do you have to make?
After that, I mean, I remember there was a book that I read when I was 17, and my overwhelming sort of feeling for the first 100 pages, and afterwards less so, but still. But I just remember like reading those first 100 pages and every new scene just getting more and more excited and more just kind of like, oh my God, like I can see the TV show version of this so, so clearly. Was The Time Traveler's Wife by Audrey Neifenegger.
Yeah.
Which if anyone hasn't read it, it's sort of this book about this man who is born with a very unusual mutation that means that over his life he will spontaneously and uncontrollably travel to different times and places.
Yeah.
Sometimes in a predictable fashion, sometimes in a very random one. And it is about this relationship that he develops with this woman who he meets, but their meetings are scrambled by his ability. So by the time that, from his perspective, he meets her for the first time, she's already known him for years because she has met him in further down the time stream by his perspective. And then vice versa. And there's sort of a lot of kind of like, how do you have a relationship with someone who kind of knows the same amount that you do,
but really doesn't.
But really doesn't in lots of ways. And I just remember sort of going, a 500-page book is too short a canvas for all the complexities of this relationship. This really wants to be like a long, sprawling, multi-year series. And hilariously, it has been adapted once already into a film, which I think had the opposite problem of it kind of
condensing
the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've seen
parts
of
that. No, there are good performances in there, but
yes, Eric Bana and Rachel McAdams are both terrific in it. But next year, HBO is doing a series about it, so I'm very excited to see that.
That's great. You reminded me that Snow Crash is coming on Amazon. It's one of my new recent favorite sci-fi books. Anyway.
All right.
I call shenanigans because why is his name flown from my mind? Just left Doctor Who.
Stephen Moffat is doing running it, right? The new adaptation of...
Yeah, this is also something that's going to exist without you. Are you usurping Moffat's place? Are you...
I haven't seen his version of it,
right.
And I'm very intrigued to see what he will do with it.
If you had to adapt something, you would adapt that anyway.
And if I had to start right now, like if somebody was like, you need to go right now, that is something that I'm like, I really love the source material. I think that it could benefit from a different medium, and I think that it could benefit from a new perspective that I feel that I can have like a good handle on to bring into it. Yeah.
I rescind the shenanigans.
All right. And I think that that's all the time that we have for questions today.
What a fun time.
Yeah, it's been great.
This was great.
Yes. Any departing words before we sign off for the week?
No. See you next week.
Yeah. Don't sell your data. Hey, if you can get a good price for it, though.
Zach, this is getting like you're using some very mixed signals right now.
I think I'm two-minded about the whole situation.
Oh boy.
I think it's a complicated.
So don't sell your data unless it's really, really worth it.
I mean, what name your price? Just think about it carefully.
Best offer. Future.
This has been No Bad Ideas. Produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.